Well, there we go. And then we'll just share it out, the link somewhere. Maybe we can put it on the Oklahoma Main Street Center Foundation site and just put it there. So first of all, I just want to thank everyone for being on here, and I want to introduce Carla Jackson. And Carla is officially part of the team, and I'm sure that you saw the Facebook post. So she is the one that is handling the Route 66 grant fund. Oklahoma Main Street Center received $6.6 million in a revolving fund to fund capital projects along the route. And then, but Carla, with her experience in grants, we're going to look for other grants for our other Main Street communities and see what we can do to help. So, Carla, where are you?
Good morning, everyone. How are you? Sorry, my camera's not working again. So I will just want to say hello, and it's great to meet you all.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Carla.
Carla.
We also have, and they're not on here, they may be on the other call, but we also have two new directors, Laura Lee Williard, she's with Tulsa Route 66, and Heather Brothers, who is with El Reno, she's part-time with El Reno. And then I think that Kendall Whittier, he has narrowed it down to a few directors, so we have new folks joining us as well. But mostly today, what we're all about is learning about Oklahoma Humanities and what grants are available. So Carrie put this together, and so welcome, Kelly. I'm just going to let you take over.
Hey everyone, I'm so happy to be here. It's been a long time since I have done a presentation via Zoom. So let me see if I can figure this out right quick. And if not, we will just wing it. All right. Can everybody see that okay? All right. Yay. All right. Well, first of all, time is limited today, and so please consider this an introduction to Oklahoma Humanities, and also an invitation to connect with me to learn more information after this is done. A lot of people don't know who Oklahoma Humanities is. We were founded in 1971, and we are a statewide nonprofit that serves Oklahomans. A lot of people don't realize that when we were founded, President Lyndon Johnson created the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts. And so we are sister agencies. So every state, a lot of people know every state has an arts council, and but they don't know that every state has a humanities council. And so most of our work, we do have programs that we offer in our state. We have a reading and discussion program that is mostly in libraries, but can also take place in museums. We have a magazine that is put out twice a year that you can get for free by subscribing online on our website. And then we also work with the Smithsonian Institution on a program called Museum on Main Street that brings traveling exhibits to rural Oklahoma communities, which is a whole other thing. We are right in the middle of that process. I would encourage you all to learn more about that at a later time. But mostly what I'm going to be talking to you about today is grants. And so Oklahoma Humanities works with communities with through our grants to provide educational opportunities that are based in the humanities. And so a lot of people do know what the humanities are, and a lot of people do not know what the humanities are. And so That is completely fine. Most of our grants take place, they're heavily rooted in history projects. So just looking, essentially what these are is these are the academic disciplines that help us explore the human experience, to help us understand each other and relate and learn from each other. And so, like I said, history is probably the main way to get to us through anything. So for example, we don't fund science-based projects, but if you're looking at the history of science, we fund like the Tulsa Air and Space Museum all the time. We don't fund zoology projects, but we could fund the history of the Oklahoma City Zoo, for example. So anyway, philosophy, ethics, law, those are all areas that we explore. So the art history is pretty specific. So if you're looking at the arts, at funding the arts, we draw a bright line between the humanities and the arts. If it's performance or the creative arts, you would go to the Oklahoma Arts Council for a grant. If you are looking at, Picasso and how his art influenced society, things like that, then you would come to us for an art grant. So we only fund organizations in four areas. So if you're a 501c3, we would fund you. Public universities or their 501c3 counterparts, that would be like World Literature Today magazine at OU or the OSU Oral History Research Project. It's kind of those university connected organizations. And then state or local government agencies, and then federally recognized tribal governments. We have split our grants into three primary areas. So if you're doing a public humanities project, it's just for the general public, we fund exhibits. That would be temporary, traveling, or permanent exhibits. Humanities discussions. If you just want to have like a speaker series and talk about local history, things like that, that would fall under that category. Cultural experiences could be things like we fund this Wewoka Sorghum Festival each year. Norman Cultural Connection is a nonprofit that hosts like Tibetan monks, and they explore sand mandalas and that kind of cultural thing. So that kind of picks up kind of some miscellaneous things that we couldn't really put into a box. And then media projects really came out as a need more during the pandemic. So that's going to be things like educational videos or podcasts and things of that nature. And preservation and access is a new category for us that I'm really excited about. So for preservation and access, what we just really want to communicate is don't forget the access part. So we want you to preserve your history and make it accessible to the public. So oral history collection is a deal right now. I mentioned the OSU Oral History Research Project. They are an excellent resource for oral history collection. They can tell you about the technology you need, the time frame you'll need. So I highly recommend consulting with them if you have that in mind. And then the digitization of collections. We went to the OMA conference this year for the Museums Association and had so many people say, I have thousands of photos and old letters, memorabilia, things that we want to preserve, and we don't have a budget for this. And I'm like, come to us. So we don't fund things like staff time, but if you had a volunteer or if you wanted to contract, hire somebody to scan those in, like that would be something that our funds could handle. And then there's language preservation, which is mostly going to be tribal languages, as you may know, are becoming harder and harder to access as tribal elders pass away and, take their culture with them, unfortunately. But we are working on that. Then we also fund education projects, and that's going to be for K through 12 students or K through 12 teachers. So for teachers, that's going to be things like teachers' workshops. If you want to work with schools to, bring some kind of local history programming into their curriculum and teach them how to teach those things, that would be something we would fund. And then K through 12 students, you could apply for a grant that brings the students, to, a museum or your main street, or to learn about, your local history. The goal would just be that it has to have humanities content on the other side. All of our grants do have a one-to-one match. So a lot of people may think that that's a little bit intimidating, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me back up just a little bit. So with our grants, it's all about the humanities content. It is all about the humanities. So, that is what we are looking for in our applications. A lot of times it just means answering the why, the question of why. So this is something about our town. Why is this important? And we require a humanities scholar to be involved in your project to help make sure that high caliber educational component is present. So what we call a humanities scholar is someone with a master's or a PhD in a humanities discipline. And so that is going to be oftentimes with us, it's college professors, but that's not necessarily a requirement. Also, we consider a humanities scholar as someone who is like a tribal elder. So they are their own culture keepers. And so we, recognize that and respect that. So the humanities scholar is either making the presentation, they're either giving your series talks or informing your exhibit. We just want to make sure that rather than, let's say, like we have Bob in town who has been a volunteer who's really active for the last 15 years, and he knows all about, our local stories. Rather than having it just be someone who's really passionate, we just want to have the educational component behind that. And they can also just be an advisor too. If you already have your idea about your project, the humanities scholar can just be an advisor. So we have two areas of grants. They're all humanities grants. The applications are almost exactly alike. The quick grants are up to $1,500. There's a rolling deadline, and the applications are only due 90 days before the program begins. So they're a lot lower barrier. They are approved in-house as first come, first serve. So our executive director will fund those as they come in until the funds run out. So as long as you have a high quality humanities project and your budget is in line, it'll be funded. And as I mentioned, this is only an introduction. So please call me to talk about that if you'd like. I'm happy to help. And then major grants are up to $10,000. And they're higher barrier. They are accepted twice a year with deadlines on March 1st and August 1st. And those go to a grant review committee that is comprised of our board members. So it's a more rigorous process. But also, I'm here to help you with that. So long as you're not like right up on the deadline, if you plan ahead, you can schedule time with me to talk about how to get our funding. And I help everyone. The nice thing about my job is that I want everyone to get a grant. And I don't make the funding decisions. So I just am passionate about helping everybody get the money they need for the things they're passionate about. And as I started to say earlier, we have a one-to-one match. So this does not have to be cash. I hear people say, I don't have $10,000. I don't know. But your staff time, your facilities, things that come free to you that go towards your project can be counted. And I like to think of myself as a great budget finagler. So I am happy to help with that and maybe help you think of things that contribute that you're not used to considering. So all of our grants are accepted online at okhumanities.org, and you can go to slash grants or just kind of maneuver your way there. It's pretty easy to navigate. And so the application is accepted there. All of your grant documents will live online, and we do have a final report after each grant cycle, and so that will happen online. So everything lives through our grants portal. And then this is my contact information. The biggest thing that I can say to you in this quick overview is that I am your friend. I am your best friend. And we really, because we are dealing with federal funds at Oklahoma Humanities, there's a certain degree of federal jargon or, terms that we have to, rules that we have to communicate. And we're not super happy about that. So wherever we can, we try to break down any barriers that we can. And one of those things is trying to not be what we call gatekeepy funders. So you don't have to call us and ask our permission to apply for a grant. You don't have to have an invitation from us. You don't have to ask for an access code. Like all these things we hear about other funders, we're like, yeah, no, we're not doing letters of inquiry. Just apply, just apply. I work with organizations that have one employee who has no fundraising experience. And then I work with large organizations like the Oklahoma City Museum of Art that have like a fundraising team, and they don't need my help. But I have a big passion for rural organizations. And I figure that if we can get you one grant and it is a template for success moving forward, then you kind of become a regular to us, and that will keep you coming back. So with our major grants, because they're more competitive, the thing I would say is call me 100 times. People are like, oh, I'm so sorry to bother you again. I'm like, no, this is my job. This is what I'm here for. Call me 100 times. I would rather you call 100 times and get our money than not call and not get our money and not know why. That just kills me. I had a museum apply for a grant for this really amazing humanities exhibit, and they said, well, these are all of the things that are going to be on display, and this is why it's important. And their application communicated it beautifully, but they didn't tell us how is the public going to know what these things are. It's like these things are in these exhibit cases. There's no, information that is, there's no like exhibit, what am I trying to say? Like labels and things like that that are going to communicate this to the public. So the grant was not funded, and everybody gets kind of a, if you're turned down, you get a form letter that says, please call Kelly for more information about this decision. And they didn't call. And I was like, ah, you are so close. Like, I really believed in this project. So if you are ever invited by a funder to contact them for more information, do it, do it. The way our process is set up online right now is that our grant review committee rates the projects online. And you get a score. And so all of the projects show up by a percentage level in the end. And we'll fund all the things at the top. We don't fund all the sliver of things at the bottom. And then all the place in between, that's where the conversations happen. And that's where, if you're on the lower end of that, we want to bump that score up. So I'm just telling you, no doesn't mean no. It might mean not right now. And then that means we're better friends than for the next round. So please, please, contact us. This is like a really broad overview. I know I'm kind of limited on time this morning, but I just wanted to say, this is who we are. We're here. These are the projects that we fund. And then, just offer to just be helpful to you in any way that I can. And I think that's it. I'm so happy to just have the invitation just to be here. So thank you for inviting me. And now I'm trying to stop the screen share. And
thank you, Kelly. I'm just going to open it up for questions, because I'm thinking about, you know, we have a lot of you are doing the time frame projects. You know, there's, we are always looking for ways to inform people about our historic downtowns. I mean, there's just, we always want to get that information and that story out. Oh, before
if
we get
recently finished the time frame out, can we still apply, or is it projects that haven't been started yet?
It's projects. So theoretically, the project, if it was like over like a long period of time, it just has to be for components that haven't happened yet. Ideally, in most cases, it's for projects that haven't happened yet.
Right. But we started on the time frame up in like January and just finished it in September.
But
so
can't
we had
you,
a lot of research.
Yeah, I was going to say, can't you expand it though? Didn't they? Wasn't there a price for?
No, I think we started with 15 stops, so I think you can add more stops to the expand it.
Okay. Also, I'm looking at the screen now. We have a lot more people on here. And I also want to welcome back Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy. He is working with Woods County, who is has joined the network program. So, yay, there he is. He's back with Main Street again. But... You guys, what other projects do you think you could do with this? Seems like there's a lot. But go ahead, Kelly. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, I was trying to make that distinction between the humanities and the arts, but we did fund the big mural at the Museum Broken Arrow, if you all are familiar with that. Because they consulted with local historians and really made it a priority to incorporate their local history. So it's something to think about. I heard somebody mention murals earlier.
Yeah, we love our murals. And I one of the things that came out of the transformation strategy in Sapulpa was the history of glass manufacturing there. That I thought was very interesting. I was wondering if there was something that they could do with telling that story of glass manufacturing in Sapulpa.
Absolutely. I'd love to know more about that. Yeah. Questions?
If I may say one thing. Kelly was so sweet. Her and Caroline Lowry, her executive director, sat down with me just to talk about Route 66 and about grants that are available. And I don't know if about you all, but I had to say, listen, I don't understand what humanities means. I don't know what that is. So thank you for doing such a great job of explaining that, Kelly, because it's a hard line to draw between arts and humanities. And the more I found out that they funded, the more I was like, oh my gosh, what the things that we could do in Main Street with this. Down to, I love the idea when you were talking about students, having a student group coming down just to learn the history of your Main Street, helping endure them to their Main Street. And you could use your time frame app for that. And just all the things that you can do. I was blown away. And Kelly absolutely means that she will hold your hand. I call her all the time. I'm like, hey, I was in this community. They want to do this. Is this something? And she'll say, yeah, absolutely. And she'll hold your hand, which I appreciate, because I'm that kind of person too. I need my hand held and I want to hold your hand, as you all probably know, because I probably want to hold your hand too. So anyway, thank you, Kelly.
You're welcome. I will say, you know, the humanities are complicated they're not easy to describe. Like what I've found being here over the years is I was like, why is this so hard to communicate? And really what I finally realized is that people who took college classes, that their degrees led them in that path, then they got the humanities. If you, you know, just went through high school or had, you know, an associate degree or, you know, your degree option went off a different direction, you probably have never heard about the humanities. And it's just a really common thing. Every time I'm in a room, I'm like, do I need to explain or not? Because people either really get it or they have no idea. And if that's you, you are not alone in that. It's very common. So if I've had people say, I have a humanities scholar and they have a PhD in communications, and I'll be like, that is not the humanities, but let's talk about like who can help you with that. So anyway, just don't hesitate to ask questions. You are, you know, if that is you, you are not alone. So we'll work on it.
Well, one thing, another project that I thought might be interesting is I was learning about the Jewish heritage in Wilberton and the Jewish pioneers. And that's an interesting story. So I thought that might be something that would be unique for that area of Oklahoma, because they have a whole pocket park dedicated to it.
But
telling that story might be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I'm sure there are a ton of ways that all of our main streets can use the humanities. I mean, there are so many stories out there that can be told, that need to be told as well. So any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you, Kelly. We appreciate you being on today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. Please reach out if you need anything. I'm here.
I'm sure there's going to be a barrage of emails to you.
I hope so.
All right. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye. So, all right. It was good having her on there. The other thing I want to discuss before we just open it up for questions or comments or ideas is I was at the coordinators meeting in Denver in October, at the end of October, and they brought up the portal. So there's a portal that's going, we also have to talk about awards too, with Kelly. But there's a portal that's going to open up through the National Main Street Center. And it's where you're going to upload documents for your accreditation. We heard about this at the national conference, where they're like, well, we're going to create this portal, and this is where you can upload like work plans and your self-assessments. And then we heard nothing. And then in October, we get there and go, well, it's going to be live in December. It's like, okay. So we were, all the coordinators were kind of shocked by that news. There was some, you know, robust discussion. We'll leave it at that word, about it. And there's going to be you all are going to get an email from National Main Street Center with a login to it. I'm typing up something right now that I'm going to send to you about what it is that they are looking for. Like the self-assessment will be done by your board. It's not going to be all the individual ones. It's going to be consensus that will be uploaded. And they are coming out with a kind of an instruction video, both for coordinating programs and for local communities, local Main Street communities. We have no idea what this is looking like. I haven't seen anything on it. So this is an interesting journey for all of us. It's going to be okay. We're going to make it through. And then all of the reporting has to be done by March 1st. So we as a team will be really impacted by this, getting accreditation done by the time the portal opens until March 1st. So it's going to be crunch time. That is what I know. That is literally everything that I know. So if you have questions, if you'll email me questions about it, or let me send out the information first, and then you can email me your questions and I'll send them on to National Main Street Center. But I'll list out what it is you'll need to upload. And then as a team, we're going to talk about the things that we have you send in with your annual agreement compared to what National is expecting. So we aren't making you do things twice. We're going to try to streamline this process. Okay. I know. I'm grinning like a Cheshire cat right now. I'm like, it'll be fine. Just the way we're going at the moment. But yeah, we were all just like, oh, wow, it's almost done. And we haven't heard anything about it. Okay. Nice. So let's move on to awards. Kelly.
Everybody's favorite topic, not. The cover sheets are now listed on the Main Street page. We have a lot of new directors, so this is going to be a quick overview, but if you have any questions about this process, please reach out to any of the liaisons or me specifically. The process will be that you submit your awards online. That link, I think it's live now. I need to go check. It was supposed to be live at 10 o'clock today, as soon as we get done talking. The cover sheets for each of the award entries, we didn't change any of the categories this year. There are 24 competitive award areas and one non-competitive, meaning Board Member of the Year. The only people that can apply for all of the awards are the fully designated programs. Associates and networks can apply for Board Member of the Year. Associates are listed on the drop-down box for Board Member of the Year. And then if you are a network and would like to send somebody in and nominate somebody, we had Canute did last year, then just send those to me directly. You can download the form online and just email me the directly, because a lot of our networks are not far enough along to even have somebody to nominate, and that's perfectly fine. But if you just so choose, we weren't going to put everybody on the form because it was just cleaner that way. So associates are board members only, and Board Member of the Year, and then everybody else is fully designated, can apply for all of the awards. Instructions are also listed on the okcommerce.gov/Main Street Awards or something like that. Once you go to our page, and it's kind of toward the bottom, the instructions are listed on there, and then so are all the cover sheets. You will need to download those. Again, the actual application process is online. The only change we did make for this year is that we will not be accepting Word documents for your photos. Let that sink in. They need to be a JPEG or a PNG. So, because we still, to this day, have people uploading photos into the Word documents and then uploading the Word documents. That won't happen this year. You'll just need directly enter those in. You're allowed 8 photos, I believe, and 2 additional attachments. So if you have a picture for, what is the deadline for the awards, will be February 23rd. You're getting an extra 3 weeks because the event hopefully will be, the actual banquet hopefully will be in September. You see our fingers crossed. So you're getting an extra 3 weeks to a month to turn those in. So. But that was the biggest change that we made. To help me on the back end, because the webmaster that is in charge of this and helped put all of our award entries together last year, she will be on maternity leave, so it'll be up to moi. to combine all of the files. So, and that's not, listen, Jeremy helped 2 years ago when we did all that, and it took both of us doing it. So just please be kind and just follow the rules. That's all I ask. Once you read through the instructions, if you have any questions, please let me know, but that's pretty straightforward. Again, there's 24 categories. We've broken them down by amounts to make things much, you know, more fair. We have also listed previous winners. If you have won a category and you want to nominate somebody again in the last 3 years, if they've won in the 3 years and it's listed, you can't enter them. Each community can only list 2 entries per award category. So if you so choose and wanted to send in 48 entries, God bless you. But that's the max, the 2 per category. Except for Board Member of the Year, we prefer 1. Okay. Does anybody have any questions? We don't know location yet of the banquet. We're still working.
You said it should be in September, not in May.
Correct. But we had to move it because National Main Street Conference is May 5th through the 8th, and that, or something close to that, and that's our same time frame. And after coming to Main Street Day at the Capitol in April and then going to National in May, we didn't feel like we could tax you guys again to say, hey, and give us $50 more and come to a banquet. And and then training in June. So we're trying to space it out a little bit.
Any other questions? Okay. We still have 15 minutes left. Let's open it up for questions. Who has questions about what?
I had a call yesterday with the Placer ID people. It was amazing, but it's so expensive. Is there like anything out there that's similar that's not $16,000 annually? Anybody know? It's like the geo tracking or something, but I mean, it was really amazing. Like, it could tell when people came to our downtown where they stayed, how long they stayed, and where they went when they left, like to the like hour.
Yes,
it was amazing.
I saw a presentation back in 2020 they presented to Commerce, and I was so giddy and excited, and I told everybody on the calls, like, this is exactly what our communities could use and need immediately. And then they turned around and gave Commerce a 6-figure number for that privilege. And they all said, nah. So I know National, I think, has Placer. I don't know their rules for using it, except for transformation strategies.
Yeah.
At this point. And then some of your bigger cities, Tulsa has it. City of Oklahoma City has it, et cetera. The ones that have the budgets to
pay. Yeah, they said it was based off of your population. That's where they got their price. So I thought ours wouldn't be very high, but it was still, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're a small town.
Yeah. I'm like, that's a lot of money.
5,000 people. And it was $16,000. I mean, can you imagine? Yeah.
Annually. Yeah. I was like, that's not like for life.
No. But it is very, very cool.
It was so cool. I feel like somebody out there has got to be doing the same thing at a cheaper price, but I haven't found them yet.
So Jesse and I just went to IABC in Dallas, and we hit up all of them, and there's nobody that's cheaper. There's Buxton, there's all them. I mean, there's Esri, there's Placer ID. There's a million of them, and they're all just stupidly priced. However, in Guymon, if you remember Sheila, that did the presentation on the last day, they have it. And she has been able to pull reports for Jesse and I for our Main Street communities. Now, you will see it compared to Guymon. But what I have to do is we need to know what you need it for. So say you're having your signature event. I'm just going to use Tahlequah. So, you know, they have the Red Fern Festival, you know, they have thousands of people coming. Well, we know the day, the times, whatever. So the day after everything ends, I can give her the information. She can pull everything within 24 hours. So but she's doing this on her own time. Her, you know, it's, we have to just make sure that it's still good. But she has offered that because she realizes that the pricing of it is usually so inhibitive. But the stuff she's been able to pull for us has just been outstanding.
And I thought that they only gave you like access to your community with that.
No, it's your community as compared to you're comparing.
Okay.
So, you know, she has all these categories and I was just dumbfounded by all of the information. So, and when we were in Guymon in August, that's what she was talking about. And then Jesse and I then met with her separately after that to make sure that I was sure what she was offering. And it's on point. So if you guys have something, so we can't ask her like all the time, but if you have like your big signature event or something you really need to pull numbers from, we can go back and ask her. So just talk to Jesse and I.
I would love to get the numbers from our Rock and Rumble event in May, the first weekend in May.
Just shoot me an email. If you guys have like your big events, you know, then that way we can kind of put it on the calendar and give her a heads up.
Sorry, I clicked in late today. I'm not getting the notifications for Zoom. I check my trash, my spam, my everything. I don't know why I don't get them. But did I miss something important about National that y'all were talking about? Could you do a quick recap of that?
Oh, with National Main Street Center, the accreditation. They're opening up a portal that is going to be open in December. And it's where you're going to upload your self-assessment, your directors, your board of directors information, your work plans, a bunch of things. I'm actually going to put an email together about it, but there will be a webinar that you can check out. There'll be a webinar for both us, it's a coordinating program, and for the local communities. So they talked about a portal at the national conference to us, and then we heard nothing. And then in October, we're like, oh, they said it's going to be up and running by December. It's like, oh, great. Okay. It'd be, you know, nice if we had known a little bit more about it from the initial thought of it to it actually coming open, to prepare people more. But this we're recording this one. We're going to put it online so that you can hear everything. You can go back and watch it. We just can't do this for all of them.
Okay. We had ours a month ago. How long does it take to normally get our reports back?
It takes a while. It takes at least 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. Just because Lisa's on the road so much and the demand is high at the moment. But we'll get them to you just as soon as we get them, we share them out. But we just haven't received several of them yet. But the reporting period ends March 1st. So we have to have all of our accreditation visits done by March 1st. So those of you that are going to be accredited communities, you'll have an in-person unless there's a weather issue. And then the others will be progress visits that happen.
But if we had ours this year, it'll be 2 years before it happens again.
That is correct. So yeah, we accredit every 2 years. But the thing is that you will still have to, on an annual basis, upload the information to the portal for the National Main Street Center. And you will get a personalized login for it. And your stuff will just be housed there. We will also be looking at what we request with the annual agreement in June compared to what's being uploaded in December, so we aren't duplicating. We don't want you to have to do things twice. So we'll be amending the annual agreement and what is required. Okay. Any other questions? Any other projects?
I don't have a question, but I just wanted to tell y'all guys, we just did that, the grant, the USDA grant with Locable and Downtown Redevelopment, and it was a pretty good deal. So if anybody has seen those, that information on that, do it. I mean, because we got a free website out of it. We were able to grant websites. We had a really good 3-day visit with Ben Levenger about our kind of a redevelopment plan for downtown ideas, things he saw. It was a good deal. So I would say if y'all see it, I know it's coming up again. I'm not sure what the deadline on it is, but.
Yeah, we just had a good chat with USDA the other day. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be looking at those grants and pushing them out too to everyone.
We just completed ours last week. So it's
cool.
It was a good deal.
Good. Anybody have anything else they've been doing or want to share or talk about? Issues?
I have a question. Would you guys, this is like the brain trust of Main Street here on this call. If you have someone in your city that is outside of your district and complains about not being included in your Main Street activities and is, you know, complaining to everyone and talking to the mayor and, you know, on Facebook, how do you handle that? Other than this is Main Street, I'm so sorry, you know, the chamber could possibly help you with something. Like, that was the advice I gave, and I don't think it was the best advice. So I'd love to hear how some of you would handle that situation.
We usually include everybody. Like if there's a business, like even the casino, like they're one of our biggest supporters. And if they want to come set up downtown an event, we like let them have a booth and come downtown. Like we don't really tell anybody that they can't be a part of our things. But when it comes to like funding or facade grants or things like that, obviously they have to be in our district. So I guess there's kind of a fine line between like what they want and what we're letting them have. But we try to include everybody. Like we want to help everybody, but when it comes to like certain things, they have to be in our downtown district. But our mission is to bring everybody downtown, so whether they're, you know, businesses downtown or not, we still want them to come down. So I don't know if that helps, but
so I think
exclude anybody.
So I know what that's kind of the issue we had with this passport. We did a holiday shopping passport and we had people in the district, you know, that participated. We had 29 businesses. This is our first year, so we're pretty excited because we're not huge town, you know, we're not a huge town. But people outside of our boundaries wanted to participate. And again, our focus is our downtown area. So if we're, you know, trying to get those people there, we thought including all of these other Main Street, because we have a long Main Street. We have actually the longest Main Street on Route 66. So there is a lot on our Main Street, but they're not in our district. So we felt that's not really focusing on that downtown area if we are including everyone. So that's what we had lashback from people, like, well, we're on Main, but you're not our downtown district. So I just wonder what, you know, how you guys, if anybody else is had anything like that.
Oh, I've definitely had that.
Okay.
So I found that if our board members or our committee members want to include others, I'll include tourism. I'll include the chamber and we'll use their members as well. So it's kind of a joint collaboration.
Okay.
But most things like our event Bonanza or the Christmas parade, that's outside. So we have vendors through different cities come and participate in those. Our window display contest, I made the mistake of last year of not putting specific boundaries just because I assumed that since our organization was doing it and it said downtown that people would assume. No, I put specific boundaries on it now. I have our map now that we show to most people. When they have questions on why they can't participate in certain areas, our grants all have boundaries. Basically, we keep it very tight now, unless we want to include others by having vendors at events or having that collaboration aspect with different partners. Mm-hmm. That helps the lash bag.
As far as partnerships go, to add kind of to that, something that we're working on in Locust Grove is trying to create like a friend of Main Street. So the businesses that exist outside of our corridor, they kind of have just a different set of like benefits that they can receive from us since they aren't in our district. But also that gives them the opportunity to support where they can and if and how they want to. But also kind of let them know that we're here and we're more than happy to help push for them. Like we have a Walmart neighborhood market and they're really interested in supporting us. They just are right outside of our corridor. So we're working on getting an official like kind of document put together so we can outline those benefits for them and let them know like, yes, we want to help you. Yes, we want to support you. But also like someone mentioned, collaborating with our chamber, lights on and Christmas parade. Like we're going to focus on the downtown corridor, but our has agreed to pick up everybody outside of that. So really just kind of getting those kind of procedures or in place will really help with that as well.
So with us, we do partner a lot. We definitely want our whole town and our whole community to be involved in everything. And I love the ideas of, like you said, partnership, everybody being included. But with just the shopping part, because we did limit the shopping part to this event to our area, and as well as a window decorating competition, just because if where do you stop, you know, in our community, we'd have, you know, over 50 or so places and on this passport. So we were just kind of like, what has anybody else done? Where is your shopping passports? Or I know a lot of people do different things, you know, the wine walks or this or that. Usually, does most everybody just do their downtown, or does everybody include everybody?
I think it definitely depends on the event. Okay. Say for Altus, you know, for Rock and Rumble, it takes the whole town, even though the event is held downtown, like, but it takes the whole town. And her shopping event, and she can talk about it, but they changed it to that anybody in the community can participate and get the tickets to give out, but they're only awarded Main Street bucks, correct?
Well, we're doing that Yifty, and it's going to be an e-card that people get. They can use it at any sponsor, and it can be anybody in town. So anybody that's, you know, wants to sponsor, because you got to raise that $10,000 that you got to give away. So anybody can. Anytime we have any kind of a event like that, we include any local business. But because, you know, the corporate ones, they won't participate anyway. But we have our events that are downtown that may be tied to something like that. But, you know, we don't. If they're one store 12 blocks away, I mean, they can't participate in a walking thing anyway. But, you know, they're welcome. We welcome everybody to participate in anything we do. But, you know, they just have to understand that if you're not right here, a few of the things you just can't. For like, you know, we've got Santa Claus and the reindeer coming the day of our first drawing for the giveaway for our 12 Days of Christmas program that we have coming up, which is the e-cards. But that will be downtown because you can't move Santa and the reindeer around. So, you know, it's just, they participate in the program, but the day of event, you know, they can't. So they just, pretty much everybody understands. There are those that want to complain about everything, that even if you give an opportunity to participate, they're not going to anyway. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know Sepulpa, they have a, on top of the shoot, I wish she was on the call. I don't think she is. On top of the shoot and all of that, they have a, their own jingle bell sweepstakes that they're doing, which involve tickets and all of that. And it's throughout the district and throughout the, you know, area, town wise, anybody can join in. And they are, they realize that the shoot's bringing people to town, and so everybody's benefiting. And again, it's that kind of that same situation, and it's, you know, money being given out, and they got to raise the funds somehow to turn around and give it back out. So it just depends. But then she'll have a whining on, let's whine about it Wednesday or whatever in the summer, whine about summer, I think is what it was called actually. And that she used to have, and it was only in the district, because again, those walking events require, you know, you want to, your focus and you're hyper focused on your district, and trying to better that district. But some of those events are just big. It takes the whole group, whole community.
Gotcha. Anything else? Anybody have anything else? Okay, well, we will post this, and so anybody can watch it, and we'll send out the link. Okay. All right. Have a great day. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon. Bye.